This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 375 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Samantha. To find out more about what a co-producer is or how you could become one, stay tuned to the end of the show and we'll give you a little more information. And also, there are still a few, it is waning, week by week, day by day, there are still a few spots left on our Pod Abroad 2021 trip this September, and we'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to say, look, the world's opening up, I need to go see me some Scotland, we're your girls, we're your trip. Find out more at podabroad.com. And finally, we'd love to hear from you as a member of our text community. You can join by sending a text saying hello or anything you like to 916-659-5112.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 55, entitled Windigo.
So, like I do in other places, it's usually we're in the books, we're often, as I said a million times before, it's not uncommon that we're given a date, right? In the show, it's a different story. But usually, or many times, it's because of a letter or an event. Well, there's not really an event with this one, but we have a date. And it is August 20th, 1774, and we are still in Leo land, but just barely, almost out, like 2 more days, maybe 4 days. I think it's 2 days. Anyway, the Fam Dam is still at River Run with Jocasta, and it's after last chapter's barbecue. Jocasta is showing Bree around the room. I guess it's her painting room, right? Her
like her studio.
Yeah.
Like her little art room.
Yeah, and she knows it so well, even though she's blind, obviously, because she spent years in there. She knows it so well that she tells Bree, she takes her to the terrorist and shows her where the light comes in and everything. She knows it so well.
I thought you just said the terrorist, and I was like, there are no terrorists.
Not yet.
In this chapter.
Well, that's true. So she takes her to the terrace and the doors and like points out, like, I wanted to sit here because of what the way that I wanted to paint or... Yeah, she painted. I wanted to paint here because this is where the light came in and it was best and it fell here and made shadows here and all. It's like, dang, girl, she's really good. Well, she is, but also she spent many years seeing full of sight and she chose it as it was being
failing
built.
Failing for many years. So it wasn't, even when she was losing it, she still had it, some of it for a while. So, you know, actually, if you're going to go blind, I feel like that's the way to go blind.
Gradually,
because then you have a chance to accustomize yourself to it, right? It's not like
that's
somebody
true.
Just turned the lights off.
And it's also a chance, and this is going to sound bad, your reason is happier. Also, it gets you like, you know, okay, it's not the same because she's not dying. So if you find out you have some kind of terminal illness and there's just like no, not even in this time, I mean today, right? Anytime, but there's like medicine, like there's nothing they can do. Whatever that condition is or illness is. Hopefully, if God forbid that happened to me, hopefully when I found out I wasn't at death's door, right? I didn't want to be that far because if you're lucky, you find out when you're still kind of well enough, at least like walking around, you know, breathing easily, that kind of thing. If it's kind of a surprise, right? If you haven't felt sick yet anyway. If I ever, God forbid, had something, I would like to find out when I am at least feeling. I may have it something on the inside of my body, but at least, maybe the effects haven't reached me, so it's not affected my life really badly yet. Girlfriend, I, at least in the way the U.S. is right now, hopefully things will change, but I'm not getting political, so that's all I'm going to say. But the way the U.S. is right now, many of us, our healthcare is tied to our job. So yes, I'd have to work as much as I could without, you know, like killing myself, and, you know, not losing coverage because you want treatment. However, to the extent that I could, I'd be like, I'd be peacing out. I'd be, okay, this is in a post-COVID world where, you know, travel's not a thing. Travel restrictions are not a thing. I'd be taking my family. I don't even mean spending money, although, yeah, it costs money to travel. I just mean like, okay, bitches, whoever wants to come with me, we're going to go, maybe not all around the world. But my point is, if I had enough knowledge and still enough mental and physical ability to travel, I would do like, maybe not a big bash, but you know what I mean? I would want to see some things or do some things before I died or got too sick to be able to enjoy them, right? Now, hers is different. It's not almost like a general problem.
It's not life-threatening. She's not going to die.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you for all of my words today. It's not terminal. She's not. It's a huge freaking bummer. It is not fun.
Remember when you used to write your own notes so you knew what you were going to say?
I did write my own notes.
I'm just teasing you.
But my tangents.
Because you can't remember your words.
my tangents don't come from my notes. So when you say that I script everything out, that is actually not true. I only script out things I plan to say. Anyway, yeah, I agree with you. I think since it's kind of coming on slowly, if you had a condition like hers that wasn't going to kill you, right? Then, yeah, you have time not only – I think I'm speaking against myself. Either way, whether it was a slowly coming on condition but it wasn't going to kill you, or it was something that was relatively slow but you knew the end was going to be, right? Mm-hmm. Either way, I'd want, especially if I wasn't going to die, but I was going to lose my eyesight, I'd still want to travel the bitch up. I want to see the world. I'd want to, if I sketched, I want to do even more. But yeah, and she kind of didn't really need that. She had, I don't know how much she traveled.
Life was a little bit different back then.
Oh, gosh.
And they had a different set of priorities. So she has a home.
Survive.
At that time period, people didn't buy homes for a few years and then sell them and go buy new homes. For the most part, they built homes to die in. So she had a place to live. It was in her place. Everything was running the way it was.
Exactly.
All she had to do was make sure that
she knew where everything
was. She was setting everything up. And I'm sure that she spent all of those years and all of her slaves, to be honest, go around and make sure that there's nothing out of place so that she can always find the things where she left them.
Absolutely. And her right-hand man, 100%, as we know, is Ulysses. So yeah, 100%. But to take it back to Jocasta and only Jocasta, yes, she didn't suddenly go blind, right? She did have waning eyesight over quite a bit of time, as we understand. So the family is still overrun, as I said, with Jocasta after the barbecue. Jocasta is showing Bree her painting room, her salon, if you will, her studio, which she chose, or she chose for certain reasons, the light, the direction, all of it, as the house was being built, or at least at the very latest, once the house was built. Bree is trying to actually sketch her aunt, or at the time her aunt was telling her this, she was trying to sketch her aunt as she's showing her the space. But we learn this is all in the past. That sketch, which she still wants to paint, is stored away, I believe, in the bottom of her of one of her boxes or bags. Currently, she was doing a paint job, literally. She was doing a commission. She was doing a paint job for someone for money. Because she's a ho! Jamie, Claire, Brie, and Jem, and Ian.
Or a businesswoman. What the f*** is wrong with you?
Nothing. Business
Why does
people
she have to be a ho?
Summer, we're all hoes for something. You and I are hoes. You could be a business person and still be a hoe. And I'm not even talking about like an actual prostitute. I'm just talking about anything in exchange for money, jokingly, can be referred to as a hoe. Man, woman, child. That sounds really bad. But yes.
That's a choice.
Agreed. So Jamie, Claire, Brie, and Jem, and Ian, we're going to stay a little longer there on the ridge after, as Summer laughed at last week. Poor Mrs. Bug. The bugs got kicked out. Sent back. But the fam dam was sticking around for a little bit. And that is how Brianna got a few more portraits commissioned. Some wealthy friends of Jocasta's had heard that she was sticking around for a bit. And so she was able to schmooze a bit. And currently, there's like a lot of currently going on. This is like back and how she got here. What brings us to the current moment? She and Ian are chatting. And she brings out the miniatures she's painted of her parents. And she says she's done it for probably a few reasons, one of which is to show potential clients who come to sit for commissions so that she could make more money. So not just, oh, here's what I can do. You want this? Great. We'll commission that and pay you more, right? So yes, it's more money, but also it's something that she could do. She could do a decent sketch of them while sitting and then do the actual bulk of the work back on the ridge, like a work from home scheme, which is pretty brilliant for the 18th century. See, she's a ho. She's a smart ho. She actually says she wants to sketch Ian. He's like, no. but he relates. He has a reason. He relates what he had learned, or at least what the Mohawk's view had been. But she does get him to sit for her. And as she's sketching Ian, she sees the shadow of someone on the terrace. And her world shifts as that person begins to whistle Yellow Submarine. Can you imagine?
I'm going to really need you to look at how you'd enunciate the word terrace. I swear to God, you keep saying terrorist. And while he is not anyone that anyone wanted to see.
He's not a terrorist.
And that song, there are so many better songs.
I don't disagree.
From that particular year. And so many better Beatles songs. I mean, it's just not one of my favorite Beatles songs. And I can say that with confidence, because my child is obsessed with the Beatles. And I've heard literally the most obscure Beatles songs possible. And that one is just not my favorite. That is the one that I will always
skip over.
Skip. I'm like, I just.
You're
and
funny.
And if I was being like haunted by a song and it was that one, I'd be like, I'm done. This is the worst. Why? Why is that the one song from the future you brought back with you? Because it's annoying and it probably can't get out of your head.
That's a question for Diana. Out of all the stuff that could have been recognizable between those two. Obviously, it would have to be like a zeitgeist, right? It would have to be something that was so culturally huge that there was 100% guarantee that if he hummed it or whistled it, she would get it. So, but there's more than that. That's what you're saying. There's more than one that could have footed that bill, whatever that phrase is.
No.
So yeah, that was interesting.
But it is indicative of the time. So we know that song came out in 1968. So we know that they didn't come back. And we already know when they came back, kind of, but that they didn't come back before 68.
So she kind of freaks. Ian grabs one of her palette knives and goes into the hallway. She tries to whistle back, but she's like so freaked. She can't get air to come out. So she sings back. And then she says, "Who are you?" And then she tells him, the person, to come in. So this who are you introduces himself as Wendigo Donner. And if you listen to the books.
Ooh, hang on. The song was from 66. The movie was in 68. Sorry.
So if you listen to Divina, you know.
I mean, if you listen to the audiobook at all, you're listening to Divina.
I'm not saying I have not listened to every single interview she's done. So it's very possible she's mentioned it elsewhere. Okay. But the only place that I know for certain that she has described but mentioned this is that when we interviewed her, I think it was the first interview, when we interviewed her and asked her like about her process and all this stuff, she did say that, you know, she says it's important for someone who's preparing a manuscript to go through and read everything and make sure you know where the people are from and get this and get that. And she said, unfortunately, it had to be book 6, because this is where Donner appears, right? He first appears at the abduction. So she said, do not quote me. It's in our interview. But for some reason, I don't know if because the book is so long thus far, we don't know about 9 yet, but thus between 1 and 8, 6 is the longest, as you hear me say a bajillion times. So I don't know if it was because of the length of the book or because just around then they were trying to, start getting ahead of the publishing date, because nowadays they do try to have the audiobook available at the same time as the publishing date of the hardback. Used to not be that way, right? It used to be months before you'd ever get an audiobook, maybe even a year or more. So it was either in the middle of this kind of industry change or I think it was. It had to have been, because if the book was done and complete and she had it and she could prepare, I think she would have. So I, for some reason, if I remember correctly, according to our interview with her, she said that she was getting it in chunks. And she said, unfortunately, because it was toward the end, we have not gotten there yet. Like, right, in us reading this as a read along, we have not gotten to this point yet. But apparently later on in the book, it says where he's from. Or maybe it's around now, right? He's from New Jersey or something like that. That's where he talks about a little bit later in this chapter. It doesn't say he was born there, but it's where he was in the Northeast. So she gave him a Liverpudlian accent. Mm-hmm. So she gave him, just because she made a choice. She made an artistic choice. She gave him a Liverpudlian accent. And she was telling us that she realized halfway through the book or toward the end of the book that he was not from England. So yeah, she had an oopsie, but she, as Summer and I have said before, or as Summer has said offline before, as an actor or as a performer, she committed. She didn't change. Oh, that was funny.
She does that a lot, except for with Buckley.
That's true. She did change it. That's true. Okay. So he introduces himself as Wendigo Donner. He appears to be his skin color, his ethnicity, his look, especially back in that day, for the day. He appears to be Native American, and he seems to know Brianna, or at least a little bit of her. And he says, "You're Fraser, right?" And she corrects him. She says, "Well, that's my maiden name." So without saying the word TT, they both declare themselves to be TT to each other. And he thinks she's Claire's daughter because he had been skulking around Riverrun the last few days, he says later on, and he had seen her with Claire and heard her call her mama. So yeah, he knows a little bit. He knows a little bit.
And he also was like, "They don't make them like you yet."
Yeah, right. Yeah, yet, exactly.
He's like, "You're too tall."
Ian jumps into the room and grabs Donner from behind, demands to know what he wants. Brianna's like, "Oh, it's all good." So they all sit down for a chat. Bree confirms that Donner had met her mother when she was kidnapped. And Donner confirms that while he first didn't believe Claire about her old man coming and being, you know, BDE, you know, all of that. But then he decides, maybe I don't want to stick around and find out. So when he heard the drums, he scrammed. And he went back to the site the next morning and found the body. So he's like, "Oh, I'm glad I left. I'm glad I scrammed." Wendigo says that Claire is the first TT he'd ever met, that he knows of. He needs her so he can get back. He needs her information.
Yeah, because his little short man guardian, also named Raymond, did not really seem to give them any specifics.
On getting back.
He's like,
or even traveling. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ulysses, apparently, so as I said, when Donner had been hanging out around, or skulking around River Run for a number of days, but Ulysses had run him off a few times because he was sketch. He is sketch. And he thinks, at least during the barbecue, he says, "Because I didn't meet the dress code." That's funny. So Bree asks him where
he came. How was there a dress code?
The barbecue.
I know, but how is there a dress code for a barbecue that literally anyone can come to?
I mean, I don't think anyone could come to.
Isn't that the whole point? Weren't they like raising money or awareness that Flora McDonald and them wanted everyone there to hear their speeches?
I don't think it was not a fundraiser. It was in her honor.
Maybe not fundraiser, but she was touting British compliance.
Not British compliance, American colonist compliance with the British. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I did not get any sense that it was an open invitation. People were invited. Typically, if anything was open, it was like, you got to be Scottish, because who else? No one else would have an interest besides the British part in Flora. The whole point of Flora, or the whole draw of Flora, was that she helped the Bonnie Prince escape. And she was kind of a point of pride. Even though they lost Culloden, they had something. So when Bree asks Donner where he came through, and in her questioning, she says it was terrible for her going through, even with a gemstone. And I wrote, oopsie Brie. So this whole conversation, like she and later Claire, like drop knowledge. And he's like bug eyed, like, what? I didn't know that. He didn't tell us that. And Brie tells Wendigo, no, you don't need a gemstone, but it does seem to offer some protection. And we don't know for sure, but it might help steer. And then Brie asks Ian to get Claire, but he's like, I ain't leaving you alone with this dude.
He's like, you go get her.
So I will stay here with your palette knife. Mm-hmm. Come on. I get it that he grabbed it like quickly because it was literally right there, which I guess this goes against that too. But I am surprised Ian is like not always packing. Come on. He always has to have some big old, not always has to. I would always imagine he would have some big old knife, but whatever.
Not in his aunt's house, though.
I can pretend. Well, it's part of his dress. Like, I don't know. But yeah, apparently he wasn't, so we grabbed. I'm going to stay here with your wee palette knife to protect this place from this weirdo.
Look, if he had a knife on him, he would have grabbed that and not a palette knife. I know,
I'm agreeing with you.
So I'm saying that if he's at his aunt's house, he's probably been told, tone it down.
Or he thinks it's a little extra safe, which now he knows it's not. So she's like, fine. So she goes to get her. When she brings Claire back.
This was really jarring.
What, Claire?
No, listening to this. Because we went so quickly.
Yes.
From third person to first person.
Yes.
That I was like, wait, what? Huh?
It's rough. It's a rough transition. I read it, but it was still, I could only imagine it was rough hearing it. So then Claire comes in and Donner is telling Ian about why he and his group traveled from the future. And he says it was to save their, meaning Native American, lands and to save their people.
But not in the way they assumed.
Yeah, exactly. Not exactly. So he'd come through in the 18th century in 1766, as he'd meant to. Brie asks about Robert Springer or Ottertooth. And she says he had arrived too late to do what you guys are trying to do. You guys are trying to do the same thing, right? You came in 1766. He arrived 40 to 50 years before you, and he was still too late. So y'all were late, but it was too late to make the impact that they had wanted, but it wasn't too late as far as they had planned. So they had arrived on time as far as according to their plan. Problem was their plan was wrong, right? Because mm-hmm. even Ottertooth had arrived too late and he was hecka earlier than
this can't
them.
Possibly actually be Master Raymond. It just can't.
I don't know.
And here's
I don't know.
Why. What interest does he have in changing the future of the United States?
He's not a Native American. That's a very good question. It's a good question. I don't know. We'd have to ask him.
I know. It's supposed to be that. Is it? Isn't it? And to me, unless there's a book that comes out that talks just about this part of Master Raymond's life, if this is Master Raymond, I mean, is it just because he likes chaos? I can't think of any other reason for him to get involved in
One thing to remember, well, okay, when we get to it, I'll point it out. But yeah, the one thing to know is that we know he's probably one of the characters we know least about, right? One of the characters who keeps occurring, whom we know least about. So the plan, there actually was a plan. The official plan had been, quote, the travelers would arrive in the 1760s, and over the course of the next 10 years, in the confusion and reshuffling, the movement of tribes and villages attendant upon the end of the French and Indian War would infiltrate themselves into various Indian groups along the treaty line in the colonies and up into the Canadian territories. They would then use such persuasive powers as they had gained to sway the Indian nations to fight on the British side in the oncoming revolution with the intent of ensuring a British victory. Unquote. Whew, that's a long phrase. So that's, as Summer kind of hinted at, that's it in a nutshell. That was why they had intended to travel. So according to that, their timeline is right as far as arrive here, do this, just around the time of the French and Indian War, in time to sway them or persuade them to fight for the British, the upcoming revolution.
But
the
now problem he's just one guy and he's like, I can't do this by myself. How am I personally going to make these changes?
That's true. But my point is, while they had a plan with dates, I mean, even a decade, right? They had dates in mind and events in mind And that's why they chose those dates, right? Get in around here with enough time to sway them, hopefully move up here with enough time to sway them to fight for the British before the revolution. Okay. So time-wise, that works as far as, is it possible? Who knows? But at least it works out time-wise. The problem is, it was a lot, even though from a history book, you can read like the dates of wars were, right? From the dates of battles. You can read when this person was killed or when this event happened. As I already said, I mean, I read it, but as Bree already said, was trying to communicate to Donner, like, yeah, I get it. You had a plan. I get it that you guys did this. However, your friend, and she didn't really know it was a friend, but they knew of him. They knew him. Your dude, Ottertooth, he arrived 40 to 50 years before Donner, and he was too late to make an impact. And he realized this. It wasn't like she wasn't saying that he did.
I don't even think he was too late. I just think that they underestimated or they overestimated their ability to sway
anyone.
Yeah. Like,
yes.
What are you, one dude? They're not going to listen to you. They didn't anticipate the people not believing them. So, and
right. And can we talk about privilege?
Yeah. Right.
Holy smokes. That's a good point, girl.
So it's not that he arrived too early or too late, or that even, you know, when Mr. Donner is too early or too late. The point is they completely don't understand the task at hand and the gravity of it and understand
they don't understand the culture. Absolutely. Yeah. So he says the whole reason for this was that the English treated the native populations as sovereign nations. And if they'd won, they'd go on doing trade and, you know, there would be some effect and some, you know, cultural exchange, but they wouldn't keep trying to push the population further west and destroy them. Colonists, he said, weren't going to stop. Now, that's what the book says.
That's not true. That's not how colonists work. And that's not how, why do we think the colonists were there? To begin with.
No, it is true that the colonists weren't going to stop. But are you saying that it's not true that the British would not have done more?
Yeah. How do you know that? You don't know that.
I'm telling you what the book says. That's all. What Donner said.
I know. I'm just complaining with his assumption of the situation.
I agree. Because my thing is, yes, it was more than just British. There were Dutch colonies. There were German colonies. There were later Spanish colonies. So yes, there's more than just people of British extraction. Absolutely. However, who were a lot of the colonists? White-skinned Europeans, and there were a lot of them from British extraction. So I'm not saying the colonists were identical.
Not just that, but let's look at what the British were doing for the colonists. For instance, the Fraser family, they were giving them land that they didn't own.
Correct.
So why would that magically have stopped? Because they were giving the colonists the things to continue doing the things for the crown. So I mean, exactly. It's like, I don't think that would have made the difference they thought it would have made.
And also, actually, okay. So also something that people have said, we may have talked about it, but I know, and they don't mention it in this chapter, but you can kind of extrapolate from this. So Wendigo's like, or Donner's like, yeah, okay, so we've come back and persuade them to do this and this so that at least at the very least, you know, the British are here to stay, you know, white man's here to stay, but it would make it so that we would save as much land as possible. Right. Okay. Fair enough. That's, I get it. I understand where his heart and where his intent is lay. Some people, at least I've talked with people, maybe you, but I've talked, you know, just for fun. And I know this,
you do talk
obviously
to me quite
the
often.
Book, ha, the book is fiction, but it's sometimes fun. And maybe you and I have actually did talk about this before on the show. I have talked with people or a person about, okay, what if the British had won? And some people have hypothesized that, well, look at Canada, right? That's what we may have ended up with. Something more like that, meaning a sovereign, quote unquote, nation, like a country, like Canada is a sovereign country. We'd be a country, whatever we're called. We would have our own, you know, government, have our own language, whatever, but it would be maybe part of, if you know, if it developed similar to the way Canada developed, then, you know, we might be part of the Commonwealth today, which has a whole other lot of repercussions. Anyway, my point is, even saying that and say, look, but if the British won, we might look more like Canada. Well, Canada has, and I'm not speaking against Canada, I'm speaking up for Canada and its Native or Indigenous or First Peoples. Canada has a lot of problems.
Girl, did you not just hear the thing that came out in the last week about Canada? They found a grave.
Oh, the babies, the kiddos.
With children as small as three in a mass grave at a... It was a school. It was a school where they were sending all of the First Nations children.
So all this to say, I understand his heart and his intent. But to think that if the British won the war, as Summer said, colonists, yeah, we know what happened. We lived in that. We're living in that modern day result right now. And it's not great. And I'm not putting down people. I'm just saying it's not great. Let's just be honest. It's not great what happened to the Native populations. It's not great. You can see maps out there and it's like speckles of land that we've given them and some of the worst land given them, quote unquote, granted them, which is ridiculous. Anyway, my point is, I totally get where he's coming from. However, if the opposite is, or if the other alternative is the British win, okay, fine. Number one, even if someone says it ends up like he thinks, at least the, you know, initially, and it goes more, quote unquote, peacefully like Canada. Canada has its own problems. And I'm not pissing on Canada.
This isn't an anti-Canadian rant.
I'm just saying they have their own issues. Their settler colonists, settlers, also settled the entire map. So, yeah, it wasn't just American colonists who were traveling all over the world trying to get more land.
Not all of it. Have you seen Canada?
Okay. It's a lot of, yes.
It's a lot, and it's a lot of an uninhabitable area.
Well, yes.
Ginger, if you look at the population of Canada, like there are maps that show you where the populations are, and there's a whole swath in the northern region that is devoid of population.
And I have not done the research to see what type of, I guess they don't use them, they don't call them, I'm guessing they don't call them reservations, but I don't know what the Canadian equivalent of a quote unquote Indian reservation is. I don't know. I fully admit that. But, and so they may have been moved and marched. I don't know. I don't know that history. What I do know is that Canada, the land was quote unquote conquered from coast to coast, just like the US was. So that's not any different. And how did it end up? Summer just mentioned a modern day, it's definitely modern day. It happened probably, I think, years ago, but it was just found. And it's not pretty. And we have our own history, not just of marching them and giving them, you know, forcing them to live on some of the worst land. We have that history, but also we also send people to those types of schools. Don't think it was a Canadian thing.
No, it was
we
all
also
about
have that. Yeah. So all that to say, it's really, this is one of those times where I think it's a wonderful use of this word. It's really precious of Donner, especially coming from the 20th century, to think that, not that he couldn't make a difference. I think that is a good gesture in his heart. I mean, that's not a bad thing to want, but to not think the next step and say, okay, if we did get the British to win, how what's gonna happen? But okay, fine. What's the result 200 years later? It ain't gonna be 3/4 of the land stays with the Native population. I don't know what you're thinking. Look at Canada. He was so yeah. It comes from a place of actually maybe not privilege, although he was. Oh, and he wasn't white, so I can't even call it white privilege. But what it So this is very like shaky ground I'm standing on because I cannot speak for any, even a fictional native person of Native extraction. What I will say is if he were white, people would call this white saviorism. Now, also he's not white. So he actually has a chance of quote unquote, you know, assimilating or mixing in when he goes back or passing at least, right? You and I wouldn't for a female, but yeah, we're like white as my computer screen. So we would have no chance. He has a chance, more than we do, to be accepted at least as long until he opens his mouth. Past that, I don't know. Especially if he sounds like he's from Liverpool. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, it was a lot of, I think his heart's in the right place. Their hearts, the people who were trying to do this, it's not bad to want things to be better for people. But it's idealistic, which is not bad, but it's short-sighted because, as I said, look at Canada, the British, there was no war like there was down here as far as a revolution. The British effectively did win. They never had to not win. They never had to fight like they did here. And so the British, quote unquote, continue to conquer, however you want to call that. My point is, they made it to the Pacific Coast. They had issues with the native population, or they, you know, they natively affected the native population, and who still are affected today. So yeah, Summer's right. It's like, what's the difference? The difference is maybe saving thousands of lives could have been saved. If the British won, I think we would kind of look, our country would look similar, maybe different states' names and boundaries or whatever. But I think absolutely they'd make it their way to the East Coast, West Coast. They, in the end, maybe the exact same things would not have happened with the native population, but in the end, it would have been somewhat similar to what happened in Canada. Anyway, that's a lot of talk on that paragraph. But yeah, he's so the word I was going to use, which I don't get to use a lot, and at least for me, it's, I have to be careful how I use it because I want to make sure I'm not using it incorrectly. But it's, this is one of those times where I think this word fits. It's very precious for Donner to think, I can do this. Or we can do this, 100 of us, 5 of us, however many.
Well,
oh my goodness.
I mean, though, to be fair, when you're, it's like mob rule, right? So when you're in a mob full of people who are like, we can do this, blah, everyone's
storm
and the Capitol.
And look at the time. It's the 60s.
But then they come back.
It's a cultural revolution, yeah.
And your little group of 5 is now just you.
Exactly. So I have sympathy for him. I'm not saying I don't have sympathy. But yeah, he got himself there because he couldn't think out all the possible steps, or he didn't try. At least that's what I'm guessing. So that was his goal. That was why he wanted to do this. So we learn that there were more than 2 of them, Otter and Donner. Ottertooth and Donner. There were 200 to 300 in the whole group. But Donner tells us most couldn't hear the stones. So it sounds like there was some kind of outreach, some type of collection of people. And a test was, can you hear the stones? Because if you can't hear them, like, goodbye, right? You can't help anyway.
That should have been the first test.
I'm sure it was. Because he says there were 200 to 300 in the group and most couldn't hear the stones. Donner says, quote, I got the idea there were, yeah. But Raymond said only 5 at a time could pass through. So we trained in, like, cells of 5. We kept a secret. Nobody in the big group knew who could travel and who couldn't. And Raymond was the only one who knew all of them, unquote. Claire, of course, has to ask, what did Raymond look like? And Donner only remembers, quote, short dude, white hair, wore it long like we all did, unquote. So, yes, we cannot say either way. Well, okay, put it this way. If he had said tall dude, we know right away it's not Raymond, right? So, okay. So the stuff he gives us does not knock him out of the realm of possibility. That's all we can say. So he was short. Okay, that fits. White hair. Now, we don't know if Raymond was just a lot older than in the time, if it's Raymond, if he was a lot older with them. Because again, dude's the time traveler. He can go wherever he wants when he wants, right? When he wants. He maybe is just older in that time and not 200 years older. Maybe 200 years older, but no, who knows? I don't think he's 200 years old. Whatever. Maybe he's older.
What if it was before he was ever with Claire in France?
That's the thing. We don't know. Absolutely. So it could absolutely be him, at least thus far. We don't have anything that kicks him out of the possibility. So short, yes. White hair, long. Why not? And what we don't know, and this is more of the realm of impossibility, is while he does have time traveling capabilities and all kinds of, you know, healing, all that, so many capabilities that we don't know all of them. What we don't know is if he has the ability to, like, change appearance. And I don't mean like his face or his forehead. I mean, like, you know, suddenly grow, make his hair white, or, you know, to fit in somewhere. I don't know. That to me is a little bit less likely because that's more like a shapeshifter. I don't think if he were a shapeshifter, he would grow taller. Come on. So
I just want to know why a group of First Nations or Native Americans who are trying to effect a change would follow a white dude.
Yeah.
And Raymond is a white dude. Master Raymond was a white dude.
Yes. So it's not impossible that it's him. Fandom, since the book came out in 2000, whatever, has absolutely been speculating. And, you know, even if it's not him, Diana threw us,
I mean,
threw
even
us something
because
she
speculating.
Chose. Of course, of course. But I'm saying, oh yeah, of course. Well, that's true. If you didn't catch it, then Claire would have made you catch it. But so it's currently within the realm of possibility because time doesn't matter. He can go anywhere. You know, go anywhere. He can be any when, go any when, and short. So that's his physical stature. That is consistent. White hair, why not? Long, you grow it. So it's not impossible yet. So what happened to Donner and his peeps, or at least Donner when he came to the stones? He reports that he came through on Ocracoke. And this is an island in the...
It's off of North Carolina, isn't it?
In the Outer Banks or near the Outer Banks, yes.
Yeah.
And... Again, like Raymond's all over this chapter. Raymond told them that there were, oh my gosh, this is one of those chapters where, yeah, you find out something that's interesting, but this is basically an info drop, right? An info drop. And it's more of the TT info drop that we get. It's more than we've known ever. It's one of those
it's all
dense
exposition.
Chapters.
It's exposition.
Completely. So where was I? Oh, I'm already down. Okay. So Raymond had told them there were many portals in the world, but that they tended to occur in groups. One of these was in the Caribbean, another in the Northeast near the Canadian border, another in the southwestern desert, Arizona, he thought, down through Mexico, and northern Britain to the coast of France.
I bet it's Sedona.
Likely more, probably, right? And likely more. So just thinking about this before we go any further. Okay, so the Ocracoke one was the one that he talked about in that, and actually what Donner said, I did not write it down, but what Donner said is that the Ocracoke one was the northernmost site in the Caribbean, right?
No, it was like the northernmost point of the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes. So, and he says, I didn't write this down either, they're not all marked, oh, I did write it down, they're not all marked by stones. And the one they went through had a stone or two, but it wasn't a circle, and it had water by it. He didn't know if it was important. Raymond didn't know if it was that important, although I don't know that. I'm pretty sure Raymond would have known, but he probably is not going to drop all that knowledge. Anywho,
the one Roger found was like in a hole in the ground.
Yes. Well, he fell down and he looked up and he saw this big thing. It was like a big, I don't know if it was, I think it was stones. But yeah. And the one in Abandaway. That one had no stones. It was under a mountain.
Yeah,
and
well,
it was in the show, it was in a pool.
In the show, they had the stone markings being on top of the mountain. So
they chickened out. The show didn't have enough confidence in that. But I get it. They want people to easily see that it's there. The book doesn't need that. Anywhoozle, because we get more time and place and all that. So I'm not, I mean, I guess it's a little bit of a shaft
well,
there.
Well, and they have more time for explanation, so.
100%. Yeah. So the book
and by they, I mean
need
Diana.
To be, the book does not need to be obvious. Because it has 1,000 pages to explain stuff. Not all portals were marked with stones. Though those in places where people had lived for a long time tended to be. Maybe not the actual site, although maybe. But I get it from that. Like, who knows how, like, no one was living up near Craignadun, or at least at the site. But I think what he meant by this, or what we can extrapolate from this, is places that are occupied is the word, but there's another word I can't think of, but it's along the lines of occupied. So places with populated. Places that are populated that have... populated by people over long periods of time. So even if someone's like not living 5-minute walk from the stones, right? There were people near enough for long enough. Enough people near enough for long enough that these places got marked because they were used.
Because they were probably problems. And, you know.
Or that. Yes,
you don't
exactly.
want to accidentally
drop through a hole.
Right.
Or walk through a spot and disappear.
I mean, Claire fell through time and there were stones. So imagine if there weren't stones there and you were just taking a hike.
100%. So that's what he says. And he says, and this makes sense, even though it's not true for Claire. Donner says, quote, meaning the ones that were marked. Quote, Raymond said those were safer. I don't know why, unquote. Wasn't safer mm-hmm. for Claire. Ocracoke, the Ocracoke site was marked, but not by a full circle. Raymond told them that one of the stones, had been marked, had African markings on it. It had been marked by slaves. So they traveled, his group, or maybe the larger group, but at least his group, traveled in late fall. And Brianna immediately says, Samhain. And he like doesn't even like respond. He's like, huh? And he just goes on. He talks about, Donner talks about how Raymond prepared them, gave them the stuff they need to travel. Like they had an amulet with stuff in it. An amulet. I guess an amulet. They had something in a pouch around their neck, or a pouch he gave them. Some local money of the time, and a wampum necklace for the only, supposedly only just for the fact that they could recognize each other. And he drives them out to the site. And even once they drove, they had to walk quite a long time. He'd shown them the pattern to walk in and told them the words they needed to chant. And when Donner had traveled, the pouch he'd been given, he recognized when he had gone through or when he arrived where he was, it was gone. And he thought he had dropped it, but he didn't think like that it could have been burned or whatever, but he may have dropped it. And he never saw, and he was number fourth out of his group of five to go. And he never saw any of them again. And once he wakes up, and I think there was one of them that he did see who was dead, right? So he did see someone had died. But I don't know if that person died before he left or died
mid-route. Or died right upon arrival.
Exactly. I didn't get that. Yeah.
He doesn't know.
So he's like, I got to get out of Dodge. So he walks around. He's, you know, on it. I don't know, trying to find population of people. He's foraging with what he could. And Bree asks if he thinks Ottertooth screwed up the group by going to a different time. And that is an interesting question. And that puzzles him. He's like, almost like he's grasping at something like, yeah, he did. He went first. So I kind of don't know how that screwed up the group when Donner has already said, no, we intended to arrive in 1766 and we did. So how does that screw up? Maybe he meant screw up by like making people die. I don't know. That's not really investigated. No one dives into that. But he seems to latch onto it and say, yes, he went first. So who knows? Then they hear Ulysses in the hall and Donner freaks out. Someone with Ulysses points at Donner as they come to the doorway. And he's like, that's the person who stole a purse. And Claire says, quote, there was no way of preserving Donner from the righteous wrath of his victim, even had I really wanted to.
Exactly. She's like, no, thanks. You only didn't rape me. That doesn't make you a good guy.
Right? So he's manacled and taken off to jail. So after he's taken, Bree says that, no, we don't know the story of this yet. I think we get it later. We will get it later. But Bree somehow pulls out of her booty that Wendigo is an Ojibwe cannibal spirit that lives in the woods, howls in storms, and eats people. Like, that's specific.
I mean, I'd heard of Wendigos.
There's a reason. Well, I hadn't. But there's a reason she knows this, and it comes out later. Anyhoozle, Claire begins to feel flashbacks of her abduction. And Ulysses says that when they ask, like, well, what's going to happen to him? And Ulysses says, they'll likely hang him. Ian is happy with that. And Claire doesn't like Donner, but feels bad that he might die. And as they're talking about Donner possibly being hanged, Jamie walks in and says, hang who?
Mm-hmm. Timing.
They fill him in. Jamie agrees with Ian. Hang him and be done. But was persuaded at the very least.
Send him back to the stones. He could die on the way back anyway. Or he could not be your problem anymore. Either way.
But he was persuaded that Claire or Bree should talk to the man before he died, to make sure they'd gotten all the info they could out of him. Jamie says he'll ask the jailer about having one of them talk to him before he's taken wherever. Jamie actually also has news and a letter from Roger. He gives the letter to Bree, and he says, the news is someone has spotted Manfred. Where? Quote, in a brothel. Where else?
I mean, once you've gone over the edge,
Lord,
man.
Why not? Right? Why change? Especially once you've got smallpox.
It's like you're already in trouble for it. Why stop?
Yeah. He believed that the sighting was in Cross Creek or Campbellton, and they still want to.
So he still didn't make it very far.
Yeah. They, meaning mostly Claire. Claire still wants to poke him with the pee, right? The penicillin. And Claire wants to go with Jamie.
Can you not ever say that again? She wants to poke him with the pee.
Claire wants to go to the jail with Jamie. And then from there, they can go together to the brothel to start asking questions. And he's like, what? He's gone. What can you possibly do? You can't help him until we find him. And she says she wants to know about if one of the girls he had been with can be talked to, they might be able to know what his current, at that time he was seen, symptoms were that he may have had. And that could tell her, you know, kind of how far along it had progressed. Even though penicillin was very successful at treating later stage syphilis, she still wanted to know for medical purposes, like approximately, if we could find out, it's always better to have more knowledge. And then we find out from Jamie, dude, he has news, that Fergus is there because a local printer, Mr. Sims, is thinking of selling his printing business because he's had some trouble. And Jamie thinks that being a printer would do a lot better for Fergus and fam compared to being farmers. And that part's like that.
I mean,
that's no cap.
Of course it would be easier on the family to be printing things than working fields all day long.
Right.
Because Marsley's done, y'all. She is capped. She does not have any more extra to give. So take her back to the city.
And before the chapter ends, Claire admonishes Ian to not be questioning whores in any deeply personal manner.
She's like, I'm very familiar with you in whorehouses, Ian. So I'm going to have you not do that because
I met you in a whorehouse, Ian.
Mm-hmm. We know that there's already syphilis running through them. So maybe don't get too familiar.
You've already had your poke. And after this poke, well, he had the poke of the good stuff. But yeah.
Didn't he get the last of the good stuff?
I think he did.
Yeah. I bet she also wants to know if her particular strain of penicillin works as well on his syphilis. Because, I mean, she could start a whole new business of just curing syphilis at whorehouses. Like, that could be a full-time job.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she did say, I didn't write it down, but she did say that she had started a batch or a culture, whatever, in the winter kitchen, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So Jocasta has got a few kitchens. We already knew that, though.
I mean,
she's rich. So.
That's what you do, I guess. And back then when you had no air conditioning, you had the kitchen that's inside and the kitchen that's outside. Because when it's especially in the South, no, thank you. No AC in the South in the summer. I have lived that life. It's not awesome.
You're done. I mean, you're happy not to.
Yep. No. And that was chapter 55. Join us next time when we will be discussing chapter 56 entitled Tar and Feathers. And if you're interested in joining us to continue the conversation, because you get bored when you miss us in the middle of in between episodes, you can join us online at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Samantha. To find out more about what a co-producer is or how to become one, or just if you want to support us in a very special, much appreciated way, you can find out more about supporting us through Patreon. Go to outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're interested in any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can check out our store at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
I always hear Sean Connery.
Shop.
And if you haven't yet joined our text community, dudes, ladies and gentlemen, why not? It is free. Text hello to 916-659-5112 and join us. We don't text often, typically once a month. Excuse me. Whoa. Scratch that. Typically no more than once a week. But sometimes if there's something special coming up or we don't always remember to do it for our new episodes, but sometimes we will do that. So anyway, yeah, join us. That would be great. We'd love to have you. Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.